Morning, everybody, on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. So glad you are with us on this Monday morning. You know, Baltimore is home to more than 600,000 people. And while there are many restaurants and grocery stores and food markets across the city, there are also many places where poverty and geography, and some would suggest structural racism, have combined to create so-called food deserts, neighborhoods where it's just not easy for residents to find any fresh, wholesome food. Well, my first guest this morning is the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown. He's the senior pastor at Pleasant Hope Baptist Church in North Baltimore. He decided to address the problem of food deserts by creating the Black Church Food Security Network. His work to bring food from local farmers to city neighborhoods by way of a network of churches has earned Heber Brown numerous accolades, including being named one of the 50 best and brightest people working to save the planet by the online environmental journal Grist. That's just one of the many kudos that he's received for this and some of his other initiatives, which include a residential solar project, an orchard program, and a freedom school that teaches young people about growing and cooking their own food. He is a busy guy, and he's here in the studio. Reverend Brown, it's good to see you.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's talk about the Black Church Food Security Network. How does it work?
Yeah, so basically, in a nutshell, we connect farmers with Black churches here in the city and create pipelines for fresh food to go straight from the farm to the sanctuaries. On days when churches normally gather, we'll come, for instance, on their Bible study day or a worship day. And once they conclude their services, we have a pop-up farm stand right there in the church or on the grounds of the church for folks to purchase food from farmers.
Right, so folks are buying it. You're not asking farmers to donate it. This is a commercial business proposition.
Absolutely. I mean, our partners in founding this network, Aaliyah Frazier, who of Black Dirt Farm on Maryland's Eastern Shore, in fact, helps to. She grows the food, her and her partner, Blaine, and they pipe the food into Baltimore. And yes, you pay the farmer. I mean, I think a part of what we're sensitive to is how the charity model has not gotten us as far as we'd like to go. And so to be more sustainable, we have to support farmers. We got to pay farmers. And the same money that people use to buy other stuff that might not be as healthy, you can pay a farmer and get twice as much and have good food for you as well and your family.
Are most of the farmers in the network also people of color?
Absolutely, yeah. We really focus on Black farmers because of the historical ways in which they've been kind of marginalized and how their presence and their role in the Black community really has been forgotten. We have, young people today think chickens grow in giants or grow in corporate, stores. And so it really is as much as a food thing, it's really also a cultural and historical thing, kind of reconnecting you with the people who grow your food, those relationships being in place. And it's really exciting seeing how those connections are being restored.
So the food then is available to folks at church. Mm-hmm. Are there also efforts to get the food from these Black farmers into the Giants and the Safeways and the ShopRites?
Absolutely. I mean, we have some very... We have farmers who are just on the ball, and they're doing so much. So in addition to Aaliyah Frazier and Blaine, other food growers and farmers are coming and joining the network as well, and we're going to have an explosion of them this season as well. But they're on the ball with pipelining their food into restaurants and farmers markets and the like. What we try to do with the Black Church Food Security Network is assist them in every way we can, at the same time giving them a built-in market in terms of the Black Church.
I know I certainly don't eat the way I ate when I was growing up.
Uh-huh.
I grew up in the era of TV dinners and all that kind of stuff. My mom's a good cook. God bless your mom. I know she's listening. But, we all sort of change and evolve in our approaches to, how we feed ourselves. Is educating and helping folks experiment with new ways of cooking and new ways of feeding their families also part of this deal?
Absolutely. Yeah. Personally as well, I'm getting an education on how to cook some of this food, and we found that to be an issue we had to address very early on. Like, give me some recipes. You can't just give me food. Mm-hmm. Give me a recipe. Give me some ideas. Do some food tastings. And so we're going to see even more of that this year, where we're going to ask and have our churches open up their kitchens, as I did mine, Pleasant Hope. A few months back, we had a culinary team come in and cook some food that was familiar enough to the mind, and so, sometimes I think when we do these food tastings, it's just so different that, it's really not appealing or attractive to some folks. And I have a picky palate. So I'm talking about myself now.
Uh-huh.
But, if you can, take a comfort food or down home favorite and just do it a different way that is familiar enough for me to try it, then I'm going to try it. And so we see that as well.
You getting much resistance to that? You getting enthusiasm? I mean, what's been the reaction? Because it is tough having folks change something as basic as what you eat.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I mean, it's, all of us, you know, change is just tough for all of us in general.
Yeah.
You know, as the human race. But how we eat is just such a visceral part of how we live.
That's so true. Because it's such an intimate part of our existence. Like, we have stories around the food that we eat. There are certain meals that you would eat, Tom, or I would eat, that take you back to your grandmother, or you know what I mean? So it's not just food. It's all the memories and stuff that comes with it. And so, yes, it can be difficult, but we can make new memories. We can add new stories to the long-held food memories and stories we have.
There is an organization, or I guess it's a consortium or something, called the Baltimore Food and Faith Project out of Hopkins and their Center for a Livable Future. So is the Black Food Security Network part of that overarching thing?
Yeah, interestingly enough, I was one of the advisory board members of the Baltimore Food and Faith at the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future. And so much of what we're doing, I learned a lot from them, and the relationships and resources and networking continues to be a great help to me now. In fact, Dario Harris, who works for Hopkins Center for a Livable Future, is also one of the co-founders of the network. And so you got a preacher, a farmer, and, you know, this expert, institutional expert and resource. We all working together, putting together the little pieces that we know and combining our powers to move this network forward.
Sounds like the beginning of a funny joke.
It's exciting.
The preacher,
right,
the farmer, and the researcher walk into a bar, and what happens? You know,
right,
they end
exactly
up with a food security network.
There you go.
Because food security, and you have, I mean, your life as a preacher is a life you really started after your life as an activist. I mean, the as I understand, I mean, do I have the order of that pretty much right? I mean, you've been at least concurrently.
Absolutely.
You've been involved in social justice issues, and food security is a basic component of social justice.
Absolutely. And you know what, Tom? It took me a little bit to kind of get to that realization. At first, you know, like many others in Baltimore, I would think about access to healthy food simply as an issue of nutrition, right? And that's super important, absolutely. But as I kept on working and studying and hearing from people like Aaliyah and so many others who've been doing this work for a long time, I began to see the ways in which it's not just a matter of nutrition. It also has to be a matter of justice, planning, policy, institutional racism. Like, how do you get to neighborhoods where they have a saturation of liquor stores but don't have grocery stores? Mm-hmm. I mean, those type of questions haunt you after a while, and you say, you know what, there's a bigger picture to this than just nutrition.
Yeah, because your church is actually not in what we would call a food desert.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're on Belvedere Avenue right off York Road, right across
the
street, basically, from the Belvedere Square.
Absolutely.
Which has plenty of food.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pricey, you know, and so, and getting grocery stores into our city is a huge challenge. There are, I think the latest count is about 45. I know I've talked to developers off the record who have said that attracting grocery stores to new developments, new shopping malls or shopping strips, you know, is really hard. The margins in the grocery store business are very short. They're very small.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, they're selling cans of soup and frozen vegetables and making cents, you know, rather than dollars on the each of those sales. It's just really difficult to get a grocer to make a commitment to the city. What could the city be doing, in your view, having studied this and worked in this field for all this time, you know, to get more folks to open grocery stores?
Yeah, I think really, and the complexity you spoke to very well in terms of just all the layers of how to even get at this issue, for at least from a corporate standpoint and development issue standpoint. I think the city, and I've seen some steps, but I think the city could redouble its efforts to really support local growers. And I've read articles recently and done some reading on regional food hubs as well. Like, what would it mean to shorten the distance between the growing of the food and the table that the food is going to be served on? What would it mean to support local farmers and local urban growers? What hurdles, rather, and what red tape can we remove to make it easier for local growers and farmers to do what they do, and us to take advantage of that? And so if your food is coming from, for instance, for us, for the network, if our food is coming from Eastern Shore, there's some things we just don't have to think about that Giants and, you know, other larger grocers have to think about. We don't have to think about it because we have that flexibility, and we're nimble enough as a network to move the food where it needs to be, get it there quickly, and directly pay the farmer. And so there's a whole lot of middle stuff that's cut out. And then also, anchoring this in the Black church, because some have asked, why you call it the Black Church Food Security Network? Well, the longest standing institution, the most enduring and sustainable institution in Black America is the Black Church. It has the longest history. It owns the most land. It has the greatest amount of resources. And it has organized people who come together every week, put their money in a basket, celebrate each other's lives, highs and lows and all that. So that's from my vantage point as a pastor. I said, man, we got so much. What more can we do? And so really birthing this thing through the Black Church is important because it helps to protect it from the turbulence that can come from trying to jump out there in a corporate sense, because this institution that's been here is going to be here.
Mm-hmm. Now, the mayor, we should say, you know, has talked about plans to offer tax incentives to grocery chains to, you know, mm-hmm. place stores in the city limits, et cetera. And it's something that every mayor in the last, you know, right. 40 mayors have worried about getting grocery stores. Right. Does the city or the state or the federal government support this, your organization, in any way? Or is this completely done, you know, by yourselves?
Right. Yeah. It's done by ourselves. We've had conversations with people, for example, in Baltimore City's. We spoke to Baltimore City's food czar and her mm-hmm. team. And she's mm-hmm. doing Holly, and she's doing,
you know, Holly Freyshot.
Uh-huh, mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's offered some great support and resources. But this is largely, you know, we're muscling it through. We're hustling and making it work. And we have about 5 to 7 churches that are going to join the network this coming growing season. We're really excited about that. Some of them have land and are ready to start gardens. Others of them don't have land to grow food, but they have space to set up pop-up farm stands in their sanctuary. So yeah. It's going to grow and be supported by the churches as well.
Well, we'll have you back to keep us up to date on what's going on with that and some of the many other projects that you're involved in. Okay, appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Tom.
The Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, he's the senior pastor at Pleasant Hope Baptist Church in North Baltimore, the founder of the Black Church Food Security Network. We've got links, WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. Coming up after a break for the news, the complexities of siblings as adults. Stay with us. Here's Mr. Sterner.